Now it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek. You know, last month, Rabbi Dan Gordon shared stories about very real people facing loss, even certain death, and how those disclosures helped to ease their hearts and hearts of their families. Today's theme, the impact stories have on our lives, is a byproduct of several requests made by many of you who wanted to explore the reasons that stories so fervently influence us in our lives. So today, with both story and banter, we'll consider several ways that stories serve as a powerful force in our lives. And my guest is just the person to turn the faucet to full flow about story impact. Jane Moser is the manager of Roz's Bookstore, where she has hosted some of the most influential contemporary writers and even some nobody cares about, like me. And she's also gracious enough to allow the Storytellers Guild of Houston to meet at this very special venue. Jane has taught speech, history, and political science at Kincaid and Lamar High Schools, as well as UHD and HCC. A powerful advocate in our community, Jane is the former board chair of Writers in the School and members of Child Builders and Planned Parenthood of Houston. Jane, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Hank. It's great
and
to be here.
You know about books and stories and authors and trends better than most. And you know, before we address some of the real specific reasons and some of the impact that stories have about our lives and influence our lives, I'm interested in your take on the oral tradition. You've seen some of these authors who are brilliant writers, and sometimes they stand up and you kind of wonder if they have any sense of meaning of words, because suddenly they're paralyzed. And you were sharing with me a little bit earlier how written and oral communication really differ. And give us a little bit of a sense of what that means. How does oral and written communication differ?
Well, you use a good example when you speak of the sort of tongue-twisted author in front of an audience who on the page is brilliant and very articulate and expressive. And I think it has nothing to do with intelligence or with the stories that people harbor within themselves. It has to do with the medium itself. Storytelling and any oral communication, I think, is much more a matter of performance. It's a question of personality being revealed as it unfolds in the words. It's a question of impermanence. Words change. Stories told orally are going to be altered over time. For example, you know, we all know the gossip game that we played as children. As stories go around and down through the generations, they take on the different aspects of personality, of contemporary experience, and so on, and they just change.
Yeah.
The truth of stories alters.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point. It's sort of like, you know, folk tales become convoluted over time.
Yeah.
We do what we do with them, whatever we want. You were saying that that there are times when an author might get up and speak, and you look at the audience realizing that it's just not going well.
In terms of book sales.
Yeah, of course.
I know they're going to hurt their sales,
right?
Because they're talking too much, when actually if we could get the book in our hands and read it, we'd be quite pleased to have them there. But, yeah, it's clearly related to the audience's response.
Yeah, oral, you know, you were talking earlier about the fact that a lot of it has to do with personality and with traits and other things, and it's so true. Yet we really have to own our stories in order to tell them well. That's what I find.
Exactly.
You know, my mother, and I've spoken about her on this show before in terms of a storyteller, She's the kind of person who can't talk to herself in a dark closet. She's terrified about public speaking. But when she was interviewed several years ago by one of Steven Spielberg's people about her background and her incredible years at Stutthof concentration camp, and of course I saw this tape when I was the ripe old age of 42 at the time, many years ago, and it was amazing what she did. Because she owned it. She owned the topic. There wasn't anybody that could talk about that other than her. And one of the most touching stories I remember, she said, was how the camera, when she was being interviewed, panned in on a small frame with a dried daisy that looks centuries old, and in fact it was. The story is that my grandfather had given my grandmother a small flower before they were separated in Kovna deportation center, and my grandmother managed to keep this flower for almost 4 years, and have it pressed. And when they came to this country, it was one of the few things they had. I've never seen such a icon of romance and hope in my life. Mm-hmm. And my mother told the story as if it was the greatest romance story God ever created. But she's the only one who can tell the story. She owned it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think you see that reflected when people, as they write their memoirs. And the first example of that comes to me is that of our president, Barack Obama, who really, through his written word, through the memoirs that he wrote and the stories he told, and he did a lot of it in his public speaking as well, but he really laid the foundation for his national prominence. People were able not just to hear him, but to go and read what he'd written and see his personality and his real story reflected there. He said famously, my story is part of the great American story. It's not just my own. And so...
Yeah. You were sharing a quote from a brilliant writer who I understand is coming to Brazos in the near future. He's from Scotland?
Yeah, and
that made an impact on me because it really said it all.
Well, it's interesting. As I started giving thought to this this interview today, I collected bits and pieces of mm-hmm. things, and I had a notepad that had been given to me last year by Alexander McCall Smith, the mystery writer, Scottish mystery writer, who, by the way, is coming to Brazos Bookstore on April 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the top of this notepad, he has a quote that I found very very interesting and pertinent about the impact of story on life. He says, a life without stories would be no life at all. And stories bound us, did they not, one to another, living to the dead, people to animals, and people to the land.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. And in so many ways, that's also the mission of this station and Open Journal.
Exactly.
You know, we talk about how to bring community together. And stories bring community together in so many ways. I just wanted to share something. And this is a journal entry from a woman who was in a concentration camp. And now she's 93 years old. I just wanted to read this just because it gives us a sense of oral tradition. Her name is Adele Kovacs, and she says, my life is now very peaceful and quiet, but it wasn't always so. Since I have time for reflection, I often recall some of the events in my life which made lasting impressions on me. She talks about one episode dates back to 1944 in Hungary, when being Jewish was particularly dangerous. At that time, I was lucky enough to have a friend, a doctor, who falsified my papers to show that I was a Christian. He also falsified my medical records to allow me to be placed in a hospital. He falsified things in order to tell the truth. Sometimes I wonder what that means. I'm writing it and I reflect upon it constantly. I only know one thing. Because of him, I'm alive and I can tell the story. And you take a look at these words, and they may not appear to be all that profound, but they really are. And we just wanted to say good morning. We are talking to Jane Moser, who is the manager at Brazos Bookstore. We're talking about the impact that storytelling has on our lives. I'm Hank Rubicek, and you're listening to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. Just getting back to the oral tradition and how it reigned for so many moons and promoted and cultivated everything from conversational to listening skills, Jane. I know that there are, you had shared with me a number of things about your father, for example, during World War II, and you had mentioned memoirs a little bit earlier. Talk a little bit about that time and how he used stories mm-hmm. to sort of internalize that episode in his life.
Well, I think... One of the main impacts that stories make on us is how we are able to pass them along. My father kept within himself for many years the story of his leaving home at the age of 16, hitchhiking from Oklahoma to California to join the Marine Corps, falsifying papers to join, and being sent immediately to Guadalcanal, where at the age of 16 he was almost mortally wounded. I think he's alive today because he was hit on the beach at Saipan the very first day. Anyway, he kept these stories within himself for many years. It wasn't until he retired and became president of the 2nd Marine Division that he started, at our insistence and at their at his colleague's friend's insistence, he started to write down his stories and record them orally for us. It has been a very cathartic experience for him, as it is for many people, to bring the stories we have inside ourselves out. Some of them are traumatic and dramatic and give to history, as his does. His oral history is now in the Pacific War Museum.
Really?
Down in Fredericksburg, yeah. So that's a gift to history, but it's also been a gift to himself, because, as we'll talk about, I guess, in our conversation this morning, the healing aspect of it is so real.
Let's go with that now. You know, you're talking about catharsis as being a very important reason for storytelling. And I know that you're attuned to so many other purposes, everything from truth and reconciliation to moral values and as a catalyst, entertainment, education. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about how storytelling serves purposes in those categories.
Okay, I'll just start then with what we're discussing now, because I think it's really important. One of the books that has impacted me more than any other that I remember lately is a book called Country of My Skull, written by a woman, Anchi Krog, who was a poet and journalist in South Africa, and it was her job to witness the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions as they went around South Africa listening to people tell their stories. And in a much different way, but very similar to what my dad's story did for him, these stories were able to document the history of what happened and allow the people to, I don't know that you move on from the things these people saw, but to continue with their lives. There's a quote from it that I will never forget. A woman who said, "We tell our stories in order not to die of life." So in the ways that people, that soldiers can recount horrible experiences, and that these people did, they document their stories. There's another quote written by one of the survivors, and here's what she says: "I, the survivor, I wrap you in words so that the future inherits you. I snatch you from the death of forgetfulness. I tell your story. I complete your ending. You who once whispered beside me in the dark." And so this applies to all the actually dying witnesses to the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. Their stories become more and more important as they physically die, and as the Holocaust deniers increase in number, the stories become vital to the not only to oral tradition, but to history itself. Mm-hmm. Studs Terkel has always known that when he started with Hard Times and Working. And another example that I'm working on these days and quite aware of is Dan Savage, the contemporary document. Well, actually, he has written a book documenting the work he's done with YouTube in reaction to all of the homophobia in this country. He has invited gay people to tell their stories on YouTube, and he's created this incredible cache of stories, and it's called It Gets Better. And he's actually bringing out a book this month called It Gets Better, in which people who have documented their stories of being gay, being bullied, and surviving it, and this is all going into a book that's coming out. So it's just another example of how vital this is to people.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I wanted to share a story that I'm thinking about now before we take a quick break. You know, in 1989, without getting into a whole lot of detail, I had a difficult time with my life, and my son and I were separated for a while, and the kind of cult relationship I cultivated with him was really very magical over time. But to make a very long, complicated story as short as possible, I'm sitting in my office one day at school, and I get a call from Kathleen Adams, who is the head of the Center for Journal Therapy in Boulder, Colorado, and she said to me, "You know, I know you keep journals, and I know you do this and that, you do workshops, you teach, and I was wondering if you can send me some of your journal entries." And I said, "Well, those aren't really for publication. Right. They're raw, they're just unrefined." She said, "Send me some anyway." I did. She flattered me. That'll work. So I faxed her a few, and she called me 20 minutes later saying, I need to use these in a book entitled Mightier Than the Sword, and I want to use these in the chapter entitled Fatherhood. And as soon as we take a break in a moment, after break, I want to read a segment from that because it really made an impact on me. And what you're talking about right now, about the notion of how stories validate our lives, is really a very poignant point. Mm-hmm. And thinking about poignancy in stories, now Laura will be telling us about the traffic jam, which apparently I'm sure it's on 45. We'll just predict that.
Actually, 45 looks pretty good. There is an accident on the 610 North Loop eastbound from Ella to Irvington. Average speed over there is 50 miles per hour. And, that's where the slow traffic is. I'm sorry, the accident is on the 610 West Loop northbound at 290. Two vehicles are involved and one shoulder lane is affected. And there is also slow traffic on the 610 loop southbound, the west loop southbound from I-10 to Westheimer. And the average speed there is 35 miles per hour, but amazingly, 45 looks good at 9:46 a.m. Current temperature is 61 degrees. Skies are clear. Humidity is 64%. Today will be partly cloudy with a high of 74 and a low of 52. Please stay tuned after story time for 420 Drug War News with Dean Becker, followed by Wide Open Spaces with Rourke, and then at 1 o'clock, Radioactive with Rhonda and Phil. And now back to story time with Dr. Hank Rubicek. His guest in the studio today is Jane Moser, manager of Brazos Bookstore.
Great. Thank you, Laura. And, you know, I just wanted to get back to this for just a moment. I wanted to read a segment from this book, just to kind of reflect myself. It says, and this is me speaking, I need to find a way to express my own despair. The daily pain lodged deep in my heart will eventually debilitate my capacity to effectively communicate with Josh. That's my son. I have to communicate to function. I can only learn this when I see my thoughts on paper. Mm-hmm. It's the only way that I can really capture it. And, you know, I now have over 80 volumes of journals because they really do help to connect to people, even when they're not together. They tend to validate our lives. And I wanted to share something else. This is from Letters from an Adult Child by Louis Anderson, the comedian. And this is what he says. He says, Dear Dad, why don't I know you better? I figure that you spend several hours a day for 40 years drinking. You multiply that by 365 days, then divide by 60 minutes, and then divide again by 24 hours. That's more than 1,000 days you spent drunk. In other words, that's more than 3 years you spent with alcohol instead of your family. More specifically, with me. I was alive for 27 of those years, and I missed you. Shame on you. Still, I find a way to love you. And I just wanted to share that. And just one more before we get back to purposes. This is from the Anne Lamott bestseller, Operating Instructions. And she kept a journal about her firstborn and what it felt like. And she says, this is from one of her chapters. Last night I crawled into bed with Sam and the kitty on the futon in the living room with religious music on the tape player. The kitty curled up next to Sam's head, and both of them purred. After a minute, I felt something under the covers with my bare foot. Whatever it was big and wet. With a 7-week-old baby, you just know it's got to be something funky. So I lay there, not moving, thinking about the scene in The Godfather with the horse's head, and I slowly pushed back the covers, sort of expecting the worst because, on top of everything, the kitty has had such doubts about my abilities as a hunter and that she's been bringing me and the baby all sorts of delicacies lately. Turned out to be a wet diaper. And it's just, you know, that kind of humor is the kind of thing that we find in these reflections of the soul. And sometimes feelings and thoughts that are really paralyzed in our minds and hearts are best phrased on paper. And these are stories that are embedded in stone. Mm-hmm. These will never change. Now, maybe the tellers will change them, mm-hmm. but when we read them,
exactly.
we feel something.
Yeah.
We feel something. I started to talk about when Kate called me and wanted me to use those journal entries, like the one I had shared earlier. There's no royalties involved, so she sent all of the individuals who was involved in the book to Boulder, Colorado, to witness and observe the book signing. And I went, and I was in the stacks. I didn't want the person who was reading me to know I was there. And I have to tell you something. I was in absolute tears. I was crying in my latte because I couldn't believe how he captured me without ever meeting me.
That's the performance, yeah.
Without ever meeting
me. Yeah.
He took these words and he told the story about my life. And I have to tell you, that was an incredible experience. It was something that will always make an indelible impression on me. Let's talk a little bit more about these purposes. What about entertainment, moral value? What are some other insights?
Well, a couple of comments to make before we go to those as far as story as catharsis, because I think that's really important and it's becoming more and more contemporary. Seniors, of whom I am a member, you know, of that happy group.
Seniors, really?
Seniors, yeah.
Well,
we
are
writing, yeah, we get some benefits.
Yeah.
Gravity is not one of them, but anyway, there's a big move among people our age to write bits of their lives, and they're taking courses and doing things, and I think all of that is really important to preserving our individual selves. The other thing that I want to comment on is the role of catharsis in relieving. We've talked about, you know, individual and social aspects of that, but we haven't thought about individual and group therapy and the role of story in those of repeating
talk therapy,
finally in talk therapy, learning to say and sometimes over and over again who we are and see then ourselves reflected in other people for the purpose of healing and coming to grips with issues. 12-step programs base much of their work on the telling of the story and the constant repetition of the story so that people in those programs remember. It's similar to the Holocaust. We want or to any event in history, whether it's personal or social, the importance of remembrance, you know, and the purpose of that, the impact of that then going forward is to change things and to heal. And
that's an excellent
point.
That's a
important.
Wonderful point. You were also talking, I just want to break for a moment and tell our listeners about the Storyteller Guild's meeting, but I want you to think about how it's used in business. You were sharing some thoughts, and I want to get back. Yeah, I just wanted to tell everybody out there that we really want you to come to the Houston Storytellers Guild meeting for our story swap every third Thursday of the month from 6:30 to 8 o'clock at of course, Brazos Bookstore at 2421 Bissonnette. You can tell one of your stories or just listen and enjoy. And please check out our site at HoustonStorytellers.org. It's a terrific organization and it's a wonderful venue, and we invite you to join us. And I'm sorry, Jane, you were talking a little bit about stories and business.
Well, as I was thinking about this topic, I looked up storytelling on the internet and saw that there are dozens of businesses engaged in teaching other businesses how to use story to market their goods and so on and so forth. And reading about that, a lot of it is just for selling things. But part of it is for branding. And I thought of Brazos Bookstore. We have a story that has become very much a part of our lore, just in the same way that this radio station has a proud, long history and a story that becomes a part of what they are. Brazos, as many of you know probably, was purchased 5 years ago by a group of 25 interested, supportive Houstonians who didn't want to run a bookstore but wanted to see this valuable community asset that was more than, and we still think is more than, a commercial enterprise. They wanted to see it continue, and so they bought it. Well, that story has become very important to marketing the business and to telling people who we are.
That's a wonderful point. Yeah, and I wish we had more time to talk about that. I really do. But, you know, Brazos Bookstore has done so much in the field of storytelling, and I just want to thank you on behalf of the community. Thank you, Jane, for taking the time to share your thoughts and insights about the oral tradition, and essential purposes that stories make in our lives. I'm Hank Rubicek, and I want to thank all of you for tuning into KPFT's Story Time on Open Journal. I want you to join me on March 25th. In the meantime, please have a safe and wonderful weekend. And if you have a time, tell a story or two. Thank you.